You're listening to TheBody.com's podcast coverage of AIDS 2008, the 17th International AIDS Conference. The conference took place in Mexico City from August 3rd through August 8th, 2008.
Hi, my name is Jim Pickett. I'm the chair of the International Rectal Microbicide Advocates and the director of advocacy for the AIDS Foundation of Chicago. We're looking at my poster, or our poster, called International Lubricant Use Behaviors for Anal Intercourse, Focus on Women. And what IRMA did in 2007 was we did a huge survey on lubricants used for anal sex, in which we had about 9,000 people respond from 107 countries in six languages, including 1,000 in Turkish. Who would have ever known? And out of all of that, we had about 911 women responded. And from those, 428 had reported that they had engaged in anal intercourse or anal sex with toys in the last 6 months. So the poster looks at those folks. And it really just shows how they use lubricant or if they don't use lubricant. And some interesting behavioral things, I think. We are obviously not going to go through every bit point by point here because it would drive whoever's listening to this crazy, but some interesting things. Most women don't really want lube with flavor, color, or smell. They kind of equally like lube consistency to be either thick or thin, and they also would like a silicone-based formulation. I think most interestingly in terms of rectal microbicide development, which is really what this is about, getting a sense of acceptability and how people use lubricants for potential rectal microbicides in the future is the substances that they add to it. So a large number of people indicated that they added vaginal fluid to their lube or saliva and water. So what does that mean in terms of testing for efficacy and safety? We're going to have to figure out how to do that in the lab. I mean, because vaginal fluid can very much change some properties. Maybe it enhances it. Maybe it makes it something toxic. I don't know. So it was just an interesting, aha moment. Like, oh my God, we can't just test the actual product. We have to test it as people are really using it before we get to people really using it. So that was interesting. So that's the thumbnail sketch, Bonnie.
You know, it's curious to me that you're studying lubricant use. So is that like a critical part of figuring out rectal microbicides? I mean, I don't really understand the connection.
Well, because rectal microbicides could very well be formulated as a lubricant. Okay. So there would be some kind of chemical or agent put into a lube that would provide protection against HIV. It could also be delivered rectally through an enema, a douche, a suppository. But we were sussing out in the overall huge survey how people use lubes, what lubes they use, to kind of suss out, again, like how acceptable will it be to use a lube for this behavior among both populations. And also, we really wanted to get a sense of what lubes people were using. Because in fact, and this is like another project for more researchers, lubes that we use for sex aren't tested for safety. I mean, these are FDA regulated products, but they're not testing them for safety. They're considered cosmetic, even though it's going in places and staying there. So we wanted to get a sense of what are people actually using, and then push researchers, like at Population Council or wherever, to test them and start to get a sense of, we need safety data on lubes that we're already using. Microbicides are like the next step, a couple steps away. We need information on lubes right now.
I see. So yeah. I actually haven't kept up on rectal microbicides and the research. I didn't know that they're considering doing it within a lubricant.
Yeah, gel formulation. Actually, we just had, or the field, the we is the royal we, the field just had its very first human safety trial. It took place at UCLA. It ended, and data will be coming out of that officially in probably around CROI. And it was testing an antiretroviral therapy, UC781, in gel formulation. So it was looking, how it reacts to the rectal tissues. And so, a lubricant is definitely a way we could potentially go. One of the big questions is how much lubricant we're going to need to use. Because with the vagina, it's an enclosed pouch. We know how much space is in there. with the rectum, it's big and open. And do we need to cover 2 feet? Do we need to put in a gallon? Or can it? Will 10 milliliters work and cover what we need covered? Will it move? And we do see stuff does move up, so will it move fast enough to stay ahead of HIV when it comes? Those sorts of questions we have to get a handle on. But lubes could very well be, since they're well, as we say here, they're very accepted and people use them. It makes anal sex a lot better. So if we can harness a behavior that's already happening, that's the way to go. That's why I mentioned enemas, because at least among gay men, a lot of gay men who are bottoms or receptive partners do some kind of enema or cleanse in advance. So if we can harness that, if you're already doing it, if you have to create something new, it's tough behavior-wise, but something you're already doing and you like doing it, uh-huh. We could give it a plus-plus, you know?
Uh-huh. Another question. This was, you had so many responses, and there were so few women. A, why were there so few women? And also, B, what is this data only from the very few women that you had?
Well, we sent it out broadly through every freaking network we could think of. Through listservs, websites, newsletters, we got press on it, word of mouth. And so we really thought we weren't going to get this many people all together. We really thought we would have 200 or 300 people. We thought no one would want to take it. It sounds boring. It went crazy.
And this was hosted on SurveyMonkey.
We did it on SurveyMonkey, and we were going to have it up for a month. It ended up being up for like 7 months or something, because it just kept rolling in. Every day we would get 100 new responses. And then we wrote it in a way that men or women could respond. So we were actually surprised at the overall total, and we were really pleased that 10% were women. Certainly 10% doesn't represent sort of how many women are really having anal intercourse. There's a lot more. Depending on the population, it can be 30 or 40%. It's a very common behavior. And for women especially, most of it is unprotected around the world. Most anal intercourse in general, just looking at people, is unprotected, and it's very efficient at transmitting HIV, unprotected anal intercourse is. We were just surprised by everything, you know?
I see in your post you say, you talk about the rate that it is efficient. Could you?
Yes, an act of unprotected anal intercourse is 5 to 80 times more likely to result in HIV transmission compared to an act of unprotected vaginal intercourse. And a lot of it is due to the biology. You know, your rectum is very tender. It's got one cell layer thick. The vagina has 40 cell layers, so it's... I mean, it's a tougher character, you know, it's a tougher customer. And in the rectum, right below that cell layer is essentially CD4 cells, T cells. So it's the welcome wagon. It's a very tender area. It's easily breached, which HIV loves. And then the welcome wagon is there going, hello, welcome, welcome to my body.
So when you say breached, you mean there might be some blood or some tears?
Sure, like even in the most gentle, loving, slow and smooth anal intercourse, you can, you know, have even small microscopic tears in the rectal lining. And if you don't use a lot of lube or if there's something else going on, it could be easier. So that's what HIV wants, is a
easy
breach
access.
Or a little place to get in. And it's just easier for that to happen than in the vagina.
Uh-huh. And just to clarify, I think most people don't understand that women and men have the same kind of rectums, right? I mean, they're identical in the sense that the way they're formed. And
they really do. Yeah, they're very similar. But there is some interesting stuff that we're just learning about, that there may be different pHs going on. So it's not clear that, like, a rectal microbicide will... that one will actually work for a boy booty and a girl booty because of the pH issue. We just don't know a lot about it. This is a field that has been under-examined. I mean, anal health, anal intercourse, there's a lot of denial and stigma, so therefore, and then, you know, funders don't want to fund it, so then researchers don't want to put in grants that say things like that on their grant. It's getting better, but it's, you know, we don't have a lot of data, so... But there is that thing about the pH, so it could become complicated.
So are you going to be analyzing the rest of the responses?
Funny you should ask, Bonnie Goldman, but in our document, Less Silence, More Science, which is on our website.
And it's on the body.
And it's on the body, thank you very much. Talks about the entire set of data. all 9,000 or so responses and breaks it down in the third section. So that's pretty complete. But there's tons of data here, so we're going to keep spinning stuff off of it. There was a ton of qualitative stuff in the that we haven't gotten to yet. And also, my God, hundreds of different kinds of lubricants that we have not actually written down each one. There are so many lubricants in the world. Who knew? Like, you think it was just KY and ID and whatever, but oh my God. So we want to do something that lets people know, like, how many there are, who's using them. So we have a lot more work to do on this. This is just sort of round two. We presented at the CDC prevention conference in the fall, winter of last year. And we just keep spinning off because there's a lot to do with 9,000 responses.
Right.
You know, we could do, like, just the Turkish responses.
I mean, this is the first time this kind of thing has been done.
It is. No one's ever done this. And we actually, this is funny, we wanted to do it. There's four languages that are really prevalent in India, Indic languages. But we couldn't find, SurveyMonkey wouldn't accept or allow us because of the characters. We couldn't find a survey system that would allow for that, and we have them all translated. We have four Indian languages translated, ready to go. There's a billion people on the subcontinent, a lot of whom are having anal sex. Anyone out there know about a survey system that allows you to use these sorts of characters? We would love to get that data, and we'll put it up again. I mean, it's a great thing.
So what exactly is a microbicide?
Well, a microbicide, they don't exist yet, so I want to be very clear. These are products in development that could provide protection against HIV with condoms or in the absence of condoms. So, for instance, they could be formulated as a lube, as an enema, a douche, a vaginal ring, and that would kind of have an agent or a chemical that would attack HIV or neutralize HIV or not allow HIV to gain hold in your body. And why are microbicides important? We need new prevention technologies. Having the female condom and the male condom is simply not enough. People don't like to use them. They don't use them for a number of reasons. They can't use them. They're in situations where violence will be wreaked upon them if they suggest using them. They're not available, etc. We need to have choices. We need to have a buffet of choices, and microbicides would be part of that buffet. In addition to, like, vaccines, pre-exposure prophylaxis, the idea of taking an antiretroviral pill every day to ward off HIV before it comes. So it's all part of that spectrum of new things, just to give people options. I think it's insane that 27 years into the epidemic, you know, I can go out and order 500 kinds of coffee, but I have really basically latex to protect me against something that's important and doing something that's, you know, that every human basically does. Most of us are sexual. It's just sort of crazy. So,
how many microbicides, I don't know if you have a number, are currently in development?
Well, yeah, I don't know.
A lot. Are there hundreds or just...
No. There's more like...
20, 30 or...
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you look at the whole pipeline, there's probably 30 or 40 products from preclinical through phase 3. We're now... What's interesting is we're starting to look at antiretroviral therapies topically. So in gel or lubricant formulation. That's sort of the next generation of microbicides are looking at that a lot. So we're going to see tenofovir as a gel, actually. It's very exciting, and you know, it won't have a broad spectrum of protection. For instance, some people want microbicides to offer protection against STDs, to be contraceptive or non-contraceptive. An ARV-based microbicide won't offer that on its own, but we may be able to combine those things. I think what will be most acceptable to people will be microbicides that meet a few needs.
And how many microbicides that are being developed are for rectal use? Aren't most of them vaginal use?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the rectal agenda is significantly, excuse the pun, behind. We just had our first phase 1 trial, which is, well, you know, you have to go a long ways before you get to a phase 3 efficacy trial. But we're moving in that direction, and actually, as I mentioned, there's this phase 1 trial that just finished, and that is an ARV-based microbicide, and it looked interesting, and there was some very interesting stuff that came out of the safety data, so that we'll likely see that one advance. So we may have our first rectal microbicide could be an ARV-based. I am not going to predict when, though. The field has predicted when many times, and you know, the nature of science, It's challenging and it's slow, so I will not predict.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
The opinions expressed by hosts or interviewees in this podcast do not constitute professional advice, should not be considered substitutes for professional services, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of Body Health Resources Corporation or its sponsors. Please see the full disclaimer online at thebody.com. If you have comments or questions, please contact us.
Thanks for listening to thebody.com's podcast coverage of AIDS 2008. For much more coverage of this conference, including news, research, video, our photo journal, and, of course, more podcasts, visit us online at thebody.com/AIDS2008.